We have a number of bills on the revised agenda, and unlike yesterday when I was following my own cheat sheet and didn't realize that it was different in order from the agenda, I'm actually going to follow the agenda as best I can. Although I will diverge from time to time and point that out to folks. Representative Shetterly has been waiting patiently. He's due in revenue, and we are going to hear his bill first. So we will go into work session on House Bill 3586 and invite up Representative Shetterly and Diane Ray from the Board of Parole. Good morning and welcome to the committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Lane Shetterly, District 34. We have, a very simple bill in front of you today that corrects a very real problem with our criminal statutes. It came to light just during this session in an opinion issued by the Court of Appeals in February in the case of State versus McLean, and that found a constitutional defect in the murder statute in that the imprisonment for life statute does not provide for making a provision for parole for a person sentenced under the murder for life statute, whereas a person sentenced under the aggravated murder statute can be paroled. And so the court found the disproportionality there to render the that provision of the murder for life statute constitutionally flawed. And I'll just read briefly from the opinion in that case. It says that the imprisonment for life provision of ORS 163.115 sub 5 sub A is constitutionally flawed, and even the state implicitly acknowledges that if the words are given their plain, natural, and ordinary meaning, the statute would not pass constitutional muster under Shumway and Cannon. And then going on, it says, if the only way the statute can be construed as constitutional is to interpret words such as imprisonment for life to mean imprisonment for a mandatory minimum term followed by post-prison supervision for life, or to hold that the legislature implicitly authorized an administrative agency to do something that the legislature explicitly declared the agency could not do, then we must give up the attempt to construe the statute to be constitutional and simply trust the legislature to correct the problem. This bill gives us the opportunity to correct that constitutional defect. Ms. Ray is here with some amendments, I think, that are, will further hone the amendment and satisfy what the Board of Parole needs to be able to work with it. And I have looked at those not in LC form, but in her concept form, and I'm perfectly comfortable with them.
Thank you, Representative Shetterly. Ms. Ray, go ahead. We have your written testimony here.
Okay. I'm Diane Ray. I'm Chair of the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I have just provided you with a memo that I had written to Mr. Horton explaining the amendments that I suggested, and these are were suggested to me by the Department of Justice from the attorneys who worked on the McLean case and have worked on other cases of ours that have dealt with the issue. And primarily, we would ask for you to address the issue that arises when the statute says that we are to conduct a review hearing 20 years at the 20-year point when someone's serving a 25-year minimum sentence. It's unclear to us what exactly the purpose of that hearing is and what we're supposed to do at that point. The aggravated murder statute and rules indicate that we are to make a determination about whether the person is likely to be rehabilitated within a reasonable period of time. And it's a difficult analysis to make when you know that the person at least has 5 more years to serve. It's much more meaningful for us to look at that person when they are actually eligible for release to determine how they would be able to transition to the community once they are eligible to be released.
All right. Now my question is, have we requested the LC draft version of this?
We have the dash 3 for us.
For some reason, I don't have my copy. Do you all have your copies?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, if I may, as long as you're getting into the amendments, unless you have any other questions for me, I'll run down and pick up our agenda in revenue.
Thank you very much, Representative Shetterly. If you want to wait for 10 seconds, you might see your bill go out.
Oh.
We are in work session, Representative Pazansky.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the dash 3 into the bill 3586.
Colleagues, you've heard the motion. This is from Representative Pazansky to add the dash 3 amendments to House Bill 3586, reflecting the changes suggested by the Oregon Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision.
Representative Bowman, we are on 3586. Is there discussion on the motion?
Just a clarification, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding. I'm reading the summary here that says that what we're actually doing is a person who's sentenced to life imprisonment, that if they have actually served the minimum mandatory sentence, that they can now be eligible for parole, even though it's a life sentence.
I'll let Representative Shetterly answer.
That is correct.
Because of the sentencing structure at the time, there is a problem with the statute, because the statute does not comport with the way it ought to work. This is not a liberalization of the sentences.
No.
This is simply a structural change to accommodate the earlier sentences to make sure that they're properly processed. Is that a fair recitation?
Mr. Chair, Representative Sinceri, I believe that because of the court ruling that the life portion of the sentence is no longer valid. In order to make,
that's right.
Make it a life sentence for murder, there has to be a parole mechanism. Otherwise, it turns out to just be a determinate sentence, and that's inconsistent with the current statute that says there shall be a life sentence for murder. So this allows the legislative mandate originally that there be a life sentence to exist legally by allowing for a parole mechanism, I believe.
That's right.
And this is a complex area. Both Representative Prozanski and I wondered about this in the first place. We did review the Court of Appeals decision and consulted with Representative Shetterly. And so what we are simply trying to do is accommodate the structure to the max, that is, as best we can, in light of that decision and the prior statutory schemes. We are not weakening any sentences by this action. We are simply accommodating that.
Mr. Chair, if I may, there's another statement here in the McLean opinion that I think underscores the problem. Under current law, the board has authority to parole offenders who are serving indeterminate sentences for pre-1989 crimes and to parole aggravated murderers. The board lacks authority to parole any other offenders, such as murderers sentenced under ORS 163.115 to imprisonment for life. And so what you have is a situation where somebody sentenced to an indeterminate sentence for life for aggravated murder is eligible for parole under current law. Someone subject to murder for life is not subject to parole. And the court found that the discrepancy between those two, where you, for aggravated murder, you can be paroled, for murder for life, you can't be paroled, rendered the life sentence under the imprisonment for life statute to be constitutionally defective.
I'm sorry to be so thick, Mr. Chair, but I want to be sure what I'm doing. Are we then saying that a person in Oregon cannot be sentenced to life without parole?
No, we are not saying that.
That's what the statute says.
That's not what the statute says. Ms. Ray, you were going to say something.
No, I.
For aggravated murder, you can be sentenced to life without parole. You can also be sentenced to life with the possibility of parole after 30 years.
Right.
The murder statute says you can be sentenced to life, or you can be sentenced, you'll have a mandatory minimum of 25 years. There's no discussion about whether or not there's a possibility of parole on the life sentence. And this addresses that gap, because the court has said that, well, then you can only be sentenced to the 25 years. You can't be sentenced to life, because life without parole is longer than life with parole. And if you can get life with parole for aggravated murder,
right.
It's not consistent to say you can get life without parole for a lower crime, which is murder.
That's right.
And we're trying to make them consistent. Mr. Penn has something to add, too.
I'm sorry, is the 10 seconds about up, Mr. Chair?
Well, that was 10 seconds in attorney time.
Well, 10 seconds of bill.
But it's helpful to have you here if you don't mind for a few more minutes. Mr. Penn?
Mr. Chair, Dale Penn, District Attorney's Association. I think that the thrust of the court opinion is basically there must be a stair-step approach for these crimes. And so if this bill passes, what you will have is, for the crime of intentional murder, you will receive a 25-year mandatory minimum sentence with parole authority. For the crime of aggravated murder,
25 years.
Yeah, after 25 years. For the crime of aggravated murder, which is intentional murder plus an aggravating circumstance, you would start with a 30-year mandatory minimum with possibility of parole. Then the other options are life with no parole or death sentence. And so you would have a stair step up the ladder. Intentional murder, 25 minimum. Intentional murder plus aggravator, 30 minimum, no parole, death.
And the way they've interpreted the statute now is all you get for murder is the 25. You don't get the life with, at all.
Got it. I'm okay. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. President. That was
no, it was, those are very good questions, Justice Cesari. It took three lawyers much too long trying to read this opinion to try to figure this out, so for whatever it's worth. All right, we have the Dash 3 amendments in front of us. Is there any objection to the adoption of the Dash 3 amendments? Seeing no objection, the Dash 3 amendments are adopted. My next question is...
Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 4586 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Representative Przanski moves that House Bill 3586 be sent to the floor as amended with the due pass. While that motion is pending, should there be an emergency clause on this bill, since we have a gap in the sentencing structure? Or is it not that important?
I'm probably not the one to ask for that.
Mr. Chair, I guess we'll ask Mr. Penn, but it seemed to me that we're talking about a very finite group.
Yes.
And so I don't think we would need to hold the bill
for
that. All right,
then we won't do that. Colleagues, you have the motion in front of you to send us to the floor with the due pass as amended. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the motion is carried. House Bill 3586 is sent to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. I'm going to ask Representative Shetterly to carry the bill.
Be glad to.
Thank you
very much.
This concludes the work session on House Bill 3586.
May all your 10 seconds be so speedy.
We'll see.
Okay.
We've got two other vehicles.
Let's see. Also, I'd like to move up. We've had some folks who've been coming in and waiting patiently as we've had in front of us. House Bill 3378, which relates to the Pioneer Cemetery Commission.
Oh, yeah.
So we will go into work session on House Bill 3378. Colleagues, you have received this morning the Dash 6 amendments, which reflect the various changes that I've been talking about during the various work sessions when this has come up. For instance, changing the time frame. I don't know if I said it during a work session. There has been discussion of the idea of changing the time frame for Pioneer Cemeteries. This Dash 6 amendment does that to say that this covers cemeteries which contain the remains of persons who died before February 14, 1909. At first, I thought that idea didn't have support. It turned out it did have support, and that's why it's in here from folks involved in these matters. The choice of date is 50 years after Oregon became a state. So there's a specific time frame for Pioneer Cemetery status. The Dash 6 amendments have one word error on page 2. Page 2, line 26, has the word compile. I checked with Legislative Council last night. They said it can be treated as a scrivener's error and change that word to maintain. And I'll explain that. It turns out that the list has already been compiled. The list simply needs to be maintained, and this was very important to Legislative Fiscal, who thought that there was going to have to be a full-time position established to go out and compile this. We got information back showing that, no, for the last 8 years, this list has been under compilation. It's just about to be distributed and all of this. And Legislative Fiscal advised me that with the new information about what's actually going on, that there is no fiscal impact statement in excess of $50,000 in this bill. So I will entertain a motion that we adopt the Dash 6 amendments with the one-word change of compile to maintain on line 26 of page 2.
So moved.
Representative Przanski so moves. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection?
Chair, I think there are some people who would like to speak to this, it looks like.
I'm not going to invite them up to speak. I've been getting a lot of mail on this.
I see.
I can explain what the provisions are if they would like. I'll pause for a moment and explain the provisions. What we are doing in this bill is we are establishing within the Department of Parks and Recreation a Pioneer Cemetery Commission. Some folks wonder about that. The establishment of the Pioneer Cemetery Commission, I see what you're saying. It says Pioneer Cemetery Advisory Committee again.
I can't believe they did that. Is that the point you're trying to point out? No, I'm going to ask that, first of all, let's adopt that motion, and we can pick up from there. We have the motion for the Dash 6 amendments with that one word change, changing compile to maintain. Is there objection to that motion? Seeing no objection, the Dash 6 amendments are adopted with that change. Now, we have the bill in front of us. We can also have another Scrivener's error corrected where the references to Pioneer Cemetery Advisory Committee should be changed to Pioneer Cemetery Commission. That change was supposed to be
made. Mr. Chair, I would make that motion because we'll be back here next year doing a bill with just a name change if we don't do it now. So let's get it over with.
All right.
Or some of you will be back here next year.
The motion is to change the references to the Pioneer Cemetery Advisory Committee to Pioneer Cemetery Commission. Is there any objection to that motion? Seeing a...
Sure. It would seem to me that we should be making that throughout the Dash 6. I see it in one way.
Yes. Everywhere where there's a reference to Pioneer Cemetery Advisory Committee, the reference would be changed to Pioneer Cemetery Commission. Seeing no objection to that motion is adopted. Now, a concern has been expressed about why start up a fresh commission with 7 members instead of carrying over the commission. And I will explain that the rationale behind that was this is being moved into the Parks and Recreation Department. It is possible for the Parks Director to reappoint all 5 members, or one of the members, or 4 members, or no members. The idea is to have the Parks and Recreation Department Director be copacetic and be working with the new folks, and in fact to also expand the membership of the commission to 7. Another concern was expressed regarding the listing of the attributes of individuals who are appointed to the commission. Please note that there is no requirement that particular individuals be appointed. It simply says at page 2 of the Dash 6 amendments, the director shall try to appoint individuals to the committee who represent or are knowledgeable concerning these various practices. That does not mean that that's an exclusive list. And someone expressed a concern that reference to Native American was a reference to a particular religious group. And no, it's a sensitivity to the fact that there are Native American burial sites throughout Oregon that need to be recognized, and this is an attempt to bring that sensitivity into play. We've adopted the change as to Pioneer Cemetery Committee, and are there any other Scrivener's errors that anyone's aware of that have come up? All right. Resident Krasanski.
I'd move the bill as amended by this committee to the floor with the recommendation of due pass.
Colleagues, you've heard Representative Krasanski's motion. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Seeing no objection, the motion is adopted. House Bill 3378 will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Sir, I would recommend that you carry the bill.
Very well. I'll be the carrier on this bill. Thank you, Representative Krasanski. This concludes the work session on House Bill 3378. We next have up House Bill... Where's my list? We're going to pass over 3057 and move to 3084. On 3057, Representative Krasanski has requested some amendments which have not arrived, and we're going to keep this pending as long as we can. We may carry it over depending on where things are. Well, let's just keep an eye on that. I did tell Representative Beyer we're going to try to move identity theft today, which is the main thing in the bill, but we do have another bill with, let's just see what happens. Maybe legislative council will get them up to us. 3084 is in front of us. We'll go into work session on House Bill 3084. Council, where are we on this bill?
Chairman, the Dash 1 and the Dash 2 amendments are before the committee. What the Dash 2 amendments do is to clarify that this bill, which regards a conditional discharge for a first misdemeanor offense, does not apply to driving under the influence of intoxicants. That is, of course, because there is already in existence a diversion program for that crime. The Dash 1 amendments are also before the committee and contain some clarifying language regarding the payment of the unitary assessment. and requires that that unitary assessment be paid within 90 days unless the court otherwise authorizes the payment schedule. Other than that, the bill is before the committee for its consideration.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a dash one amendment.
You don't? Okay.
I have a dash two.
I have a dash two.
I have a dash two.
You have a dash two.
Yeah.
Is dash two the new version?
No, just part.
It's just add
up one.
Just
part.
Oh, you have a dash two?
Who cares? It does sound like a bill. All this liberal stuff. Look at this. Who just let him off? I thought you didn't like district attorneys.
That was the only home they were going to
have. So,
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'd go ahead and move the dash two.
Colleagues, Representative Pozanski moves adoption of the dash two amendments to House Bill 308.
So there are no dash.
They're coming.
They're coming. We're just working backwards.
Do the dash twos include what's in the dash ones?
No.
They do not.
No. Sure. Dash twos just basically says that you cannot use this conditional discharge in the driving under the influence of intoxicants because we already have the diversion program that covers driving under the influence.
So we have the dash twos in front of us. Representative Pozanski has moved adoption of the dash twos. Further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, the dash two amendments are adopted. Now we are having that dash ones printed up. Well, let me take a look and see if we can just share them and show them to people here.
Mr. Chairman, I could just ask some clarification on this.
Sure.
Maybe Mr. Horton can just help me.
Sure.
In Section 1, it says, whenever a person pleads guilty to or is found guilty of a misdemeanor, the court may defer further proceedings. Now, what kind of a sentence is available to a judge to administer under a misdemeanor?
For a Class A misdemeanor, they can get up to a year and or $5,000. Now, what this provision says, and really an important part is on line 6, that it has to be on the DA's motion. This caused me a little bit of concern as well, thinking that you could have someone go to trial, be found guilty, and then the judge could basically say sentence of discharge, which actually the judge could in some cases do now. What this says is that the DA can make that motion on the DA's own accord and allow for that.
Now, the question, Mr. Chairman, is that one of the criticisms of Measure 11 is that the district attorneys are the ones that are making too many of the decisions, and I want to know if this falls into that category where it gives more discretion to the DAs in these matters.
If I may, Representative Terry, actually, in this kind of situation, it's really almost a charging decision, but the point is that we're actually moving back a step where presently you just go forward and you have the charges made. This allows them to take a step back and agree to this program. It's seen by many as a positive development with further flexibility. If Measure 11 had been in effect for 20 years and then suddenly we said that there's going to be some pullback from that, folks who wanted more flexibility would say that's what's happening. This is a pullback, but it's still in the hands of the district attorney.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I understood committee counsel, he said that under current law, the judge currently has the authority, if after hearing everything, to set the sentence aside. And so in this case, the decision is actually the district attorney's, because the district attorney would have to concur before the judge would be able to do that.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, almost. That's almost right. Under current law, let's say that a defendant is found guilty at trial, the judge can simply refuse to impose a sentence. Judges don't do that too often, but they can for a misdemeanor. Mm-hmm. Now, what this would allow is for the DA to make that motion instead of the judge. It doesn't say that the DA has to concur in that in order for the judge to do it. It simply allows another option if perhaps after the district attorney has either accepted the plea or convicted the defendant to say, judge, in this case, I think that we could have a conditional discharge.
So in a way, in terms of Representative Cesari's question, the judge actually right now has the power
if the judge chooses, and apparently very selectively the judge may choose, this doesn't take away that judge's power, but this opens up the process to the district attorney raising the issue even earlier in the proceeding.
Well, then it almost vests that power, the judge's power, in the DA.
Well, no, because the judge has to make the decision.
But the DA can make the motion, right?
Well, you can make the motion, but it's the judge who grants it or denies it.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, Representative Patridge is the sponsor of this bill, and his staff informed me this morning that if the committee wanted him to come and answer some questions about this, that he would be available to do so.
Would you like that?
Well, I certainly don't want to delay the committee any further. I know we've got a workload, but to be honest with you, I would say at this moment I would be a no vote on this bill.
If I may, Representative Sinceri, the idea is that right now the judge afterwards may choose not to proceed with sentencing, and that doesn't happen very often. The judge, in this case, is the one who still has to decide, but it brings it up earlier where the DA makes a motion.
Well, Mr. Chair, I wouldn't presume to debate, obviously, with you, but can't the judge do that already? I understood Mr. Horton said that the judge could decide not to sentence right now, so the judge has that discretion.
That is true, and I should probably draw one small but important distinction between what can currently happen and what this bill would allow. What currently can happen is that the person will be guilty, but there will be no sentence. Now, this is almost the same, but technically it's reversed because the judge under this bill would, upon the motion of the DA, put the person on probation without entering the sentence of guilt.
Without entering the judgment or the judgment of guilt. So you do avoid having guilty entered into it. But why don't we call up Representative Patridge? We can go in recess on this. Let him come up and pitch on it.
Well, again, don't delay the committee for my sake, Mr. Chairman. But
no, we'll recess on House Bill 3084. And where is Representative Patridge?
Just put him in the committee, and we are calling him up right now.
All right.
We'll
call him up.
There may be serious trouble
here.
Can I sit on that side? You're starting to agree on things.
We're starting to go on each other. I knew I'd bring you around. Just took me years to do it.
Didn't you hear my give me liberty or give me death speech last night?
Now, on House Bill 2432, I understand there's further work being done on that bill. We've been asked to carry it over. Colleagues, I should mention that the Speaker, in light of the amount of work which we've been doing, which is voluminous, has indicated that she is open to having us continue to carry over the first few days of next week, only as to bills we've been presently working on. And so we will be able to continue to work on some of these bills. I do not want that to become our excuse for not working them, and she's made it clear that she doesn't want that. But as to the bills we've had set and that we've been working on, we may continue working to conclusion on those bills, which will give us a little time to do this properly, which is what we want to do. And 2432 is a good example. Apparently the counties and the state are close to an agreement, but not quite there. And so we will set that over. Next up is 3110. Counsel, where are we on this bill?
Mr. Chairman, the committee has before it the Dash 5 amendments. What the original bill did is required a mandatory minimum of a 10-year sentence for manufacturing various sorts of controlled substances. What the Dash 5s do is limit the controlled substance under the bill to methamphetamine, and instead of 10 years, provide that there is a mandatory minimum of 60 months, 5 years. unless the crime occurred within 1,000 feet of a school, or if the offender has a prior felony conviction for manufacturing or delivering a controlled substance. And in that case, it would go up from a mandatory minimum of 60 months to 90 months. And the reasons that this was lowered really had to do with some constitutional concerns about proportionality.
I didn't go to my office this morning. I came straight here, so I don't have any of the packet that I was given last night. Representative Brzezinski.
Mr. Chair, I guess I am concerned about us looking at starting mandatory minimum sentencing for drug offenses. I base that on my review of the literature for the federal government as well as many states that have taken this path before us, and many of those now reflecting and coming back and trying to undo that. Specifically on the federal system, 65% of the prisoners that are in federal incarceration are there for nonviolent offenses, and I do believe those are also classed as drug offenses. And it seems to me that the approach that we need to be taking is different than just trying to warehouse people, because at this point, our prisons are not equipped to address those issues for people that are coming in with other crimes, with the dependency in these areas of addictions. And so I will not be able to support a mandatory minimum sentence in this situation.
I appreciate your comments, Representative Fazansky. Colleagues, we have this bill in front of us in work session. Representative Sinceri, do you move the Dash 5 amendments to this bill?
Mr. Chair, can I just ask a question before that? If is there a fiscal impact on this?
I assume this has to go to Ways.
It does, yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, yes, I move the Dash 5s into 3110.
Representative Sinceri moves adoption of the Dash 5 amendments. Do you wish to discuss your motion? All right. We will take a roll call on the adoption of the...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, President Hanson.
I'm concerned on the mandatory minimums on drug offenses also, but I think I'm more specifically concerned about adopting a specific mandatory minimum tied to one type of drug. We tend to react to the various drug epidemics as they come through. You can almost chart them like you can chart a disease in terms of the amount of usage, the duration of the problem. It peaks and then it starts going down. And we've seen this with crack. We've seen it with various heroin epidemics. I think we're overcomplicating things when we single out a specific drug for a specific reaction to, and probably the reaction ends up being later than the maybe too late to stem the epidemic that may be tending to run its course. So I'd rather see us, if we're working on to work more generically in terms of drugs rather than singling out specifics. I've also got Dash 3 amendments that maybe after at some point we may be able to raise as an alternative, but on these amendments, I'll be voting no.
Mr. Chairman, I just wasn't going to make a comment, but I think that methamphetamines have been with us from the beginning of the drug problem, and they're many and they're varied, and I think it is a perpetual problem that probably deserves to be addressed specifically. And I agree that there are other forms of drugs. There was a heroin up and down, and cocaine, as you say, but methamphetamines are just always there, and the meth labs are extremely dangerous, whereas, the import of some of the other kinds of drugs don't take on the dramatic effects that meth labs can to real property and to neighbors and those kinds of things that some of the others do. And so I think stiffening that up and being a little more diligent about methamphetamines is probably appropriate.
President Bowman.
Mr. Chair, when we originally heard this bill, we heard testimony that the federal mandatory minimums for this particular drug was 100 grams, and we are suggesting that 10 grams should receive a mandatory minimum. So there's a discrepancy between the federal level in order to induce a mandatory minimum and what we are proposing here as a state. And so I won't be supporting this either, because there's an inequity in how that is operated. If someone is arrested for this, they'd be in their right mind to do everything they can to make sure that they're prosecuted in federal court and not state court.
Representative Hanson?
Sure, that brings the point up. If there's going to be a shifting from state court to federal court, do we have legislative fiscal?
This will have to be referred to Ways. Further discussion on the motion? The motion is to adopt the Dash 5 amendments to House Bill 3110. Please call the roll on the motion.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunseri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
No.
Chair Manning?
Aye. The motion is carried. The dash five amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3110 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
My colleagues have heard that motion. Discussion on that motion? I discern some objection. Please call the roll on the motion.
Representative Bowman?
No.
Representative Gianella?
Aye.
Representative Hanson?
No.
Representative Simmons?
Aye.
Representative Sunseri?
Yes.
Vice Chair Brzezinski?
I support the motion as it stands to go to Ways and Means, but I do not support the context of the bill, so I'll vote no.
Aye. The motion is carried. And House Bill 3110, as amended with the dash five amendments, is sent to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Colleagues have been asked in the past, so we'll close the work session on House Bill 3110. We will take a 10-minute rest break. Seems as good a time as any. So we are in recess for 10 minutes.
Can you be in my seat? Please, 10 minutes?